Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. More than 3.5 decades since its release, Star Wars is more popular than ever. News of the series' reboot means a new round of earnest excitement, but for now, blind fandom has been replaced among aficionados with a new level of ironic appreciation for the universe. Family Guy and Robot Chicken have celebrated the trilogies, the ill-fated Star Wars Christmas special that features Chewbacca racing across the galaxy for the holidays has millions of YouTube views, one-man Star Wars performer Charlie Ross has been on this very show, and actors Simon Pegg and Nick Frost reportedly began their comedy partnership when one recognized the other's droid sound effect at a dinner. All of which is to say it's surprising that it took this long to bring the ivory tower gravity of Stratford-on-Avon to the swamps of Dagobah. But novelist Ian Desher has done just that in his new book, William Shakespeare's Star Wars, Verily a New Hope, out now from Quirk Books. And before you curse the ghost of Thomas Boldler, think about it for a second. Star Wars and Shakespeare is not such a stretch. There's the Falstaffian comic relief of C-3PO and R2-D2, the questions over legacy and progeny that consume Darth Vader like an interstellar King Lear, the underworld of a Shylock known as Jabba the Hutt. So before he exits pursued by a Wookiee, it's my pleasure to welcome Ian Desher to the Roundtable. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
I was hoping you could set the scene by reading the famous yellow title credits that scroll through the beginning of all Star Wars movies the way Shakespeare might have done it.
Here we go. Prologue, outer space, enter chorus. It is a period of civil war. The spaceships of the rebels striking swift from base unseen have gained a victory o'er the cruel galactic empire now adrift. Amidst the battle, rebel spies prevailed and stole the plans to a space station vast, whose powerful beams will later be unveiled and crush a planet, 'tis the Death Star blast. Pursued by agents sinister and cold, now Princess Leia to her home doth flee, delivering plans and a new hope they hold of bringing freedom to the galaxy. In time so long ago begins our play, in star-crossed galaxy far, far away.
And it goes from there, really. So here's the question. How did you come to do this in the first place?
It was a mix of things last year. I watched the original Star Wars trilogy for the first time in a few years, although I'd seen it a zillion times. And not too long after that, I picked up Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, which is sort of the first book in this mashup genre. And right after I finished that book, I went down to the Oregon Shakespeare Festival with my family. And so I sort of attribute it to having Shakespeare and Star Wars and mashups all swirling around in my subconscious, because it was at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival that I had the idea for this book.
How many times did you have to watch it as you were writing the dialogue, or did you go from the script itself?
I did a mix. So I would sit in, I would watch about, you know, a few seconds of the movie at once, and then I would look at the script online and make sure I had the lines right or the names of minor characters right, things like that. And then I would write out some of the, lines in iambic pentameter, and always stopping to think, is there a chance for a character to have an aside here, or to put them alone on the stage to have a soliloquy, something like that. The process was basically watching a few seconds of movie at a time and then consulting the script as needed.
We'll get back to that in a second, but did you have more or less respect for George Lucas's dialogue when you got that deep into it? Because reading the Shakespearean version, there's not much, I have a bad feeling about this.
Right. That's a great question. I don't know that my respect for the dialogue, increased or decreased. I will say that my wife has read a couple of reviews that said, wow, this makes the dialogue, you know, much better than it was from the original movie. And she says, look, they're saying nice things about you. And I say, no, honey, they're not saying nice things about me. They're making a dig at George Lucas. There's a difference.
You mentioned a minute ago that you looked for opportunities to, you know, write a Shakespearean aside or a soliloquy for some characters. One of those characters is R2-D2, who, in the course of the plot in the book, sticks to his beeps and squeaks, but you give him a voice that he's never had before. How did you decide to do that?
Early on, I contacted Quirk Books about doing this book, and they then took it and contacted Lucasfilm, and they took my first draft, which stayed pretty close to the original movie in terms of dialogue. I didn't add a whole lot. And it was Lucasfilm that came back and said, well, we like what he's done so far, but we'd like to see him go ahead and have a little bit of fun with it. Go ahead and take it outside the bounds of the movie. And so that was a huge gift to me in terms of the creative process as a writer. And so one of the early decisions I made after they sort of gave me that license was I thought, you know, what would be really fun would be to have a character who does not actually talk in the movies all of a sudden have these asides where we realize that, you know, he has a much deeper you know, soul than we might expect or something like that. And R2-D2 is the natural choice for that because in many ways he is the catalyst for a lot of the action, especially in that first movie. And his beeps and squeaks in the film are wonderfully expressive. And so, you know, I think it made a lot of sense to have him breaking into English and he's saying the sort of snarky yet noble things I think that we would all sort of expect him to say.
Which Shakespeare plays were you particularly influenced by when you put them side by side with Star Wars?
In terms of overall structure, I think the book is sort of most like Henry V, and that's because of the use of the chorus. Early on, again, I was thinking, you know, how am I going to show the action that happens, because Star Wars is in some ways an action film, and how am I going to show this action but be true to the fact that Shakespeare used very minimal stage directions? And so I sort of remembered my Henry V, where Shakespeare uses a chorus character to come in and say, you know, how can we show you the great battles of Harfleur and Agincourt on this stage? And that he does so by sort of having this chorus come in and explain what's happening that you can't actually see, but that it is the action that's happening. And so I decided to use that same device. So I think in terms of that structure, it's closest to Henry V. In terms of actual lines, I draw a lot. You know, occasionally I reference Shakespeare lines either directly or at least a little bit more subtly. And I do most of that from Hamlet. And that's mostly because Hamlet is the play that I know the best. And so those lines were sort of top of mind.
Are you doing the trilogy? Are you going to do the next two?
I'm hopeful that the trilogy is happening, that the other sequels will happen, but nothing is certain yet. I think it would be a lot of fun to see how Yoda talks in a galaxy where already everybody's word order is a little bit strange because it's Elizabethan English fitting into iambic pentameter. So I think there's plenty to still be explored there, and we'll just see if it ends up happening.
I mentioned in the introduction that we had Charlie Ross, who does the great one-man Star Wars performance. You know, it's a comedic and very physical thing, and he has a deal with Lucasfilm where he's basically an employee there. They take a cut of the show, and that was how they hashed out the legality of what he was making a living off. And your co-author is George Lucas. You said that you had a relationship with them getting a look at the draft. So is that fair for you as well, that you are sort of in the Lucasfilm family?
Lucasfilm has a whole publications department that approves or denies the requests that come in to, you know, use Star Wars, use the whole Star Wars product. And they're the ones who approve manuscripts that come by them. So I wouldn't go so far as to call myself a Lucasfilm employee, but I've definitely been in close contact with them as I wrote this book, you know, sending them the manuscript, having them write back and tell me what things are okay. And that was a fascinating process, and they were great to work with. Fascinating because, you know, they have such a very clear, you know, idea of their brand. I mean, it's just sort of amazing. One soliloquy that I had written for Darth Vader had him saying something like, "The death of innocence doth bring me no joy," or something like that. And they wrote back and said, "No, sorry, at this point, as of A New Hope, Darth Vader is totally evil. He doesn't have any sort of remorse or anything like that." And so I literally changed that line to, "The death of innocence doth bring me joy," right? So it's, okay, let's flip them right around. But it was interesting because, I mean, again, they have such a clear picture of where all of their characters are in these particular movies.
Speaking of which, what are your hopes for the new Star Wars movies that J.J. Abrams is starting to work on?
I think it'll be fascinating to see what happens. I think having J.J. Abrams working on it, having Lawrence Kasdan being one of the writers, I have a lot of hope for it. I have a lot of hope that they'll, if nothing else, sort of redeem what happened with the prequels. Although the prequels, I will say, got better with each one. But still, you know, I think all Star Wars fans are hopeful that we're going to see something that sort of restores our faith in the franchise.
Ian Desher is the author of William Shakespeare's Star Wars, Verily a New Hope, which is out from Quirk Books. And Ian, a great pleasure to talk Shakespeare and Star Wars with you. I don't think I ever thought I'd say that on the radio, so thanks very much.
Great. Thanks, Ian.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.